United States versus Johnson.
May it please the court, counsel. Your honors, when Mr. Murphy and I argued this suppression motion in front of Judge McDade, it dawned on me then that this would have made a great law school question for a final exam, because it involved every single Fourth Amendment issue I could think of regarding the exception to a warrant requirement under the Fourth Amendment. And it just seemed like we touched on every issue. And that's the problem with this case, because we have to jump through so many Fourth Amendment hoops to get from the original unlawful stop to getting the gun admitted into evidence. It seems to me that this court would find that the Green case, which it seems to be the leading case in this circuit, regarding the admissibility under an intervening circumstance idea, it just doesn't comport with the Fourth Amendment. And if you look at the facts, just very briefly, you can see why this is so. You've got a traffic stop not based on probable cause or reasonable suspicion. When the arresting officer flashes his light on the driver of the car, he immediately recognizes him, and he knows that there's an outstanding warrant for his arrest. I guess when you're in Peoria and you're a criminal, you run the risk that the cops are going to know you.
Well, yeah, but doesn't that attenuate the taint of the illegal stop?
Well, that only raises the question, Your Honor, whether it does attenuate the illegality of the stop, because everything flowed.
I mean, it's good luck and it's bad luck.
Well, exactly. It was bad luck for him that the police knew him, but that doesn't answer the question. It raises it. And the question is,
a law enforcement officer sees a parolee or a probation violator, he can't stop him and arrest him?
Oh, no, not at all.
Right.
But just to make it clear, what it was, he had some outstanding arrest warrant,
right,
bench warrant for some
absolutely
traffic violation.
So why can't he pick him up on that authority?
Oh, he can. He can, and
he's wanted.
He certainly can, because the Green case certainly says that, because it would be absurd to say that just because the police make an unlawful stop, if they recognize a person.
How is it unlawful if he recognizes them?
Oh, no. That's not my
how
point.
How is it unlawful?
It's unlawful because not only do they make a search incident to arrest, they find a small amount of a white powder in his headband.
But what's unlawful about that?
Nothing. Nothing's unlawful
right
about that. But then they go beyond that. They search incident to the arrest the passenger compartment of the car, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
But then they go on to search a closed briefcase in the closed trunk of the car.
No, wait a minute. First, aren't they lucky enough to have the stuff kind of in the hat?
Well, that Judge McDade said that gave rise to probable cause to search the entire car.
Why can't
drugs?
If they're going to take the man into custody, what should they do? Leave the car parked there and let someone break into it, and then have the police department responsible for what was in the car as a result of them taking the individual out who had the car?
Well, the police tried to justify it based on an inventory search.
That's right. But that's what I'm talking about.
But it's clear that they didn't even follow their own procedures to do that.
Here, isn't this the bottom line, that we have police officers involved in a stop in which they broke one rule after another, but ultimately the evidence is saved because we apply a number of exceptions to the exclusionary rule?
You're right. That's exactly what they did. But what the Green case said was that there has to be some, you have to look at the three-part test to determine whether the original taint has been purged by the intervening circumstances. But it's one continuous search from the stop of the car until they find the gun. But we know that the original stop was unlawful, according to Judge McDade's analysis. Then you have to apply all these exceptions, which all had other reasons for their justification other than what the cops wanted to do. The cops wanted to find a gun. They were concerned about that. That was their original purpose in stopping the car. And it was clear that even Judge McDade said the officers didn't have probable cause to search the trunk for a gun. It would have only been for other narcotics, which the judge found probable cause to believe had occurred. But look at that for a second, Your Honors. They found a light tan powder in the headband of this of Mr. Johnson. They didn't even field test it.
And well, they're not contending that they have to conduct a field test of a powdery substance found in a suspect's hat before concluding that the substance is probably an illegal drug. Are you?
What I'm saying is that it's
you expect them to do a field test out at the time of the arrest in Hayfield?
Well, it was actually in...
I don't care where it was.
Okay.
So even if it was at an airport. You expect them to do a field test someplace else.
I think that it's one fact that the court can consider...
No, just answer what I asked you, yes or no.
I do expect the police to do field tests out in the field of narcotics. And they didn't do that in this case. And I think that the court can consider that as one fact in the totality of the circumstances as to why there was not probable cause.
Okay, they find this stuff hidden in his hat. Of course, they already know who he is.
Right.
Those aren't circumstances to give rise to probable cause to search the car for drugs.
That's what Judge McDade ruled. But respectfully, Your Honors, I would conclude that under this totality, when they didn't field test it, when they searched the passenger compartment with two officers, found nothing, when they knew that the car didn't belong to Mr. Johnson, that he had borrowed it for the evening. In fact, there's no question that he lawfully had that vehicle. There was no question about that, and that it didn't belong to Mr. Johnson. I would respectfully suggest that under that totality, that before they searched the trunk, they needed a warrant or some other exception to the warrant requirement of the Fourth Amendment, such as the intervening circumstance rule of Green. But the problem with that was that there was no break in time. It happened immediately in the span of a few minutes.
But they had a valid arrest warrant, didn't they?
You're right, and that would serve as a valid intervening circumstance to make a search incident to arrest, just like what occurred in Green, what occurred in Ionco, and I believe there are other cases either before or after the Green case that talk about that. But then there's the third requirement, that the purpose and flagrancy of the misconduct would not be such that you cannot apply this exception. And in this case, the officers exploited that unlawful stop to find that gun. It wasn't a case where they found it incident to the arrest. It was where they applied an inevitable discovery exception and a flawed inventory search in order to find the gun. So with all due respect, we would suggest that the court should reverse Judge McDade's ruling.
Thank you, counsel.
May it please the court and counsel. Good morning. I'm Brad Murphy from Peoria, Illinois. It is indeed the government's position that the instant facts present even a more compelling argument for this court to find intervening circumstances than the facts in Green. In Green, the arrest warrant was discovered after the improper stop and a five-minute detention that followed. Here, the officer already knew about the outstanding warrant when he walked up to the car. Thus, there was no exploitation whatsoever of any improper detention. Just no exploitation here at all. Probable cause intervened as well, besides this outstanding arrest warrant. That gave the officers the authority to search the entire car, including the trunk, which revealed the weapon. It's also the government's position that the application of the doctrine of inevitable discovery would justify this search because there was a lawful inventory search that followed, and it would have discovered the weapon in the trunk had it not been recovered earlier.
Under your theory of reasonable suspicion, would the police have reasonable suspicion to stop every lone car cruising a known drug area in the early morning hours?
No, I don't think my argument goes that far. It involves both a description of the vehicle and proximity, Your Honor. This vehicle was described particularly. I believe there was both a color and a make of the vehicle, which both were matched by the officer. In addition, and the question to me boiled down there, would I as either a citizen or a judge expect the officer to stop this vehicle and make an inquiry? And every time I ask myself that question, I answer it yes. Judgment Date answered it no. That concludes my prepared remarks. If there are no other questions.
Of course, they didn't identify the source of the information. That was an important factor in that judgment.
Indeed it is, Your Honor. Those cases indicate that where the identity of the informant is known, perhaps less has to be verified. But my point is the officer verified everything he could here.
So you don't think he broke one rule after another like I do?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you, Counsel. Is there anything else that you wish to say, please? Okay, go ahead.
Your Honor, regarding the reasonable suspicion argument, Judge McDade heard three officers testify at a very lengthy suppression hearing. The officers were thoroughly questioned. Judge McDade thoroughly questioned the officers, and he concluded that the radio dispatch lacked sufficient detail, and the stopping of this lone car several blocks away was insufficiently tied to that radio dispatch to justify reasonable suspicion. We would ask that the court affirm Judge McDade on that portion of the ruling and reverse on the other issues.
Thank you. Thank you. Court will take the cases under advisement. Court is adjourned until 9:30 a.m. tomorrow morning.